Coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Columbia, Maryland, satellite office of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast, featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, and ESPN analyst Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Before we start, I want to thank you guys. You've been killing it, so keep up the good work. Our podcast numbers have been extraordinary the last few weeks, and we really appreciate it. So keep telling friends about it. If you like what you hear, drop us a note at Dixon Lacrosse or at D_Fly on Twitter, or you can drop me an email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. If you like what you hear also, please subscribe, leave a rating on iTunes or wherever you listen to it, and share it with a friend. Pass it along. Also, don't forget to check out Monday's In the Crease podcast with Abern and Devitt, along with Friday's Weekend Preview podcast featuring Quint Kesenick and Terry Foy. Dixie, let's get it. Mark Dixon, welcome back to the podcast.
I thought I was fired. The rumors were flying last week that I was fired, suspended. What else? I was on, traveling.
Yeah, you've been busy.
So you had people fill in, I guess.
Try to fill your shoes. It's very tough.
Well, you had to use like six or seven people from what I heard.
Of course. One man can't fill your shoes, or a woman. So we tried to patch up what you could do, but it's impossible to replace you. So tell us where you've been. You were last week, you were in Atlanta for a work conference.
Yeah. So, prior to that, I was in Chicago covering games for the Big Ten Network. And then I flew directly from Chicago to Atlanta on Monday, beginning of last week. My real job is I work for a pharmaceutical company, Merck.
Well, first of all, your real job is you do this podcast, the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. This is your life's passion.
Yes. So when I heard I was let go, I was quite distraught. Yeah. So, you guys were having a good...
belated April Fool's.
You guys were having quite a yarn, and I was...
We still got to talk about the Abern part of that, but...
Okay.
So...
So I went to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And then I was there through the end of last week.
And you work for Merck Pharmaceuticals.
Work for Merck, yep. Yep. And then got home and was able to spend some time with my family. And then last Saturday was in
College Park.
In College Park for the Penn State-Maryland game for the Big Ten Network. Then later that evening, I worked the PNC Invitational for Corrigan Sports.
Who played in that?
That was it was a girls' game, Good Counsel and McDonough.
High school.
Okay. I did not work that game. And then I worked the boys' game, which was Loyola Blakefield against Bullis. So
who won that?
Bullis, 5-4.
They got a lot of D1 kids on that program, right?
Yeah. Alex Trippi and Attackman.
Yeah, he's going to UNC.
UNC. Yeah, they had a nice team. Well, I mean, it was a...
He's playing in our Commit Academy.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was a close game. Their goaltender down the stretch, Chris Del Rosario, if I recall correctly, made some critical stops. And then I flew back out on Sunday morning to cover Hopkins, Ohio State. So it's been quite a busy time, but wouldn't have it any other way. It's that time of year. You roll up your sleeves, you get to work, and you watch some great lacrosse. And
yeah,
it's all good.
So before we get into, we're going to start with the games that you covered, but I want to just talk. Let's put a bow on this controversy. So Dan Abern has been chirping me a little bit. Mm-hmm. Respectfully, kind of funny, actually. I appreciate it. He had a good intro to his podcast on Monday. But our last give-and-go together, we did a three, the give-and-go was America's Greatest Rock Band. And you said Metallica.
Guns N' Roses.
And Van Halen.
And I also had Foo Fighters in there.
Yeah, sure.
So,
and
my list was supported by virtually everybody.
That's fine.
Compared to yours.
I imagine that your friends supported that.
No, I mean everybody. Not just my friends, but everybody. Because your band sucked. Your first two bands suck.
Oh, Bruce Springsteen and the Grateful Dead. Yeah, they're pretty popular bands. So then mine was Pearl Jam. And
yeah.
I did go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, how
this
was
weekend.
That?
It was really cool. It was...
Now, while you saying it was really cool, I was totally expecting you just to say it was incredible, awesome. You didn't use any superlatives to describe your experience. Why not?
I'm just getting warmed up.
Okay, gotcha.
So there were, it wasn't... It was in the Barclays Center. It was sold out. There was probably 80% Pearl Jam fans, and they knew that, so they Pearl Jam was the last band to be inducted. But it was cool. They had Electric Light Orchestra, ELO, started.
Evil Woman.
Yeah, they played that. And these bands that get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like, they're older bands, you might not know them, or dad, parents listen to them, or you listen to them as a kid and you haven't heard them in a while, but you know the words.
Well, ELO,
every song, they play like three or four songs, yeah. You know all of them.
ELO had Jeff Lynne,
yeah,
right?
Still
is he still kicking?
He's real good.
He was part of the Traveling Wilburys.
One of my favorite bands too.
Now you're adding them to one of your favorite American bands. I like them better than Bruce Springsteen. Traveling Wilburys. They're a lot better than Bruce Springsteen.
I'm just laughing at you for that comment. But yeah, so ELO, and because Chuck Berry had passed away, they did a little tribute to Chuck Berry, and then they played, and then Joan Baez was inducted.
Oh, God.
She played with the Indigo Girls.
Oh, I like the Indigo Girls,
it was
a
tough crowd for, you know,
I can imagine.
Four women standing up, old women standing
How
up there.
How many are on this planet? Will you shut up?
You know, considering, like,
did Blutarski come out and smash the guitar against the wall?
She held her own. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah.
The crowd was respectful, and then Yes got in.
I've been to a Yes show back in the day.
Yeah, Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson.
Not a Rush fan.
Rush inducted them though, and then played with them. It was really cool.
Was it good?
Yeah,
I'm not a Rush.
Really
fan. I've never liked Rush.
I've never been a big fan of Yes.
Oh, okay.
I like Rush, but I'm not crazy into them like some people are.
Right.
But like Matt Kinnear is really into Rush, thinks they're fantastic. And they're good. They're a really good band. They're just
not my favorite. No, they're not.
Yes was great. And then
Neil Peart's an amazing drummer.
He may be
I'll
the best
that.
Drummer
yeah,
of all time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then, and I will go this far as say, I think Geddy Lee. This is a tough category. Of all the
Geddy Lee makes
of
me
all the
look
bass,
like George Clooney.
That's true. Of all the bass players who sing, Paul McCartney excluded.
Bass
right?
players singing.
he might be the best.
Out of all the five bass players that sing in the history
right,
of
I
music.
I don't know if it's a long list. I mean, Paul McCartney's the best, but Geddy Lee is right up there.
Sting. Sting's, you know, Sting.
Yeah, but I think Geddy Lee's better than Sting. Anyway, so Tupac was inducted, and guess who walks out on stage to not only introduce him, but accept the award from him because he has no living relatives, apparently.
Biggie Smalls. Hold on. No. Not Biggie Smalls. Suge Knight.
Snoop Doggy.
Really?
And the crowd went wild.
Oh, boy.
And then Alicia Keys did like this piano a medley of Tupac songs with Snoop rapping over it. It was really, really good.
That sounds interesting.
Then Journey came out. And they
oh,
were
boy.
Inducted.
Was Steve Perry? Did he?
He was there.
Right.
It was the first time he's appeared with the band in like 25 years in the same room.
Right.
He accepted the award. He gave a really nice, gracious
and
speech.
And then they
the
beat
band.
Him up.
And then they sent the Filipino guy out to sing the songs.
You're kidding.
Yeah. And the whole audience was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
He's here. Why isn't he singing his own songs that he wrote? And nobody knows why. Maybe those songs are really hard to sing. And he's a really good singer. I think maybe like he just can't hit those notes anymore. Or there's a contract thing. Like he's not allowed to actually appear live singing the Journey songs because of some agreement that the band
Or
has.
Maybe it's the band didn't want him to perform
that
with them.
Be,
or he didn't want to perform with the band. I mean, there was a lot
I
of,
don't know.
Was there a lot of bad blood?
No. It didn't seem that way on stage. It was like a love fest.
Because I'm not a Journey guy, but Journey's part of that whole genre known as corporate rock. You remember that? Like if you do a Google on VH1 corporate rock,
okay.
It was like a behind the music or some type of show years ago about corporate rock, and those bands that fit that mold of corporate rock were like Journey, Foreigner, REO Speedwagon. It was almost like I'd have to go revisit this, but
like Safe Radio Rock.
No, it's almost like. Like, you know how boy bands are constructed? Like, it's like this kid and this kid and this kid. And
well,
then,
that's not how those bands were formed.
But that's what I'm getting at. It was like they were formed, or maybe not formed, but their music, there was like a certain, like, limp, like there were parameters in which they had to perform. So that hence the term corporate rock.
And then
have to look that up.
And then Pearl Jam would have been the next band to get in, the sixth band. But
right.
They milked it. So they brought out Niles Rogers got a Lifetime Achievement Award that Pharrell gave to him.
Okay.
And then they did a.
Did Pharrell wear his Arby's hat?
He did have a pretty sweet lid
distinguishable hat.
And then they had a Prince tribute that Lenny Kravitz played.
I could see him doing
it. It was really good. He played two songs.
Lenny Kravitz is a badass.
Yeah, with the like the Harlem female choir singing. Okay. It was great. And then
what songs did he do?
When Doves Cry.
I was going to say When Doves Cry would be a choir type.
I don't remember the name of the second song, but it was pretty good.
Purple Rain.
And then Pearl Jam came out. So then Pearl Jam, they had their award. They got their thing, and they all gave speeches, like all the other bands did. But then they played three songs.
Jeremy Spoken.
They played, didn't sing Jeremy. They played Alive.
Yep.
Given to Fly.
Okay.
And Better Man. It was fantastic.
Brought the house
and then
down.
Neil Young was supposed to introduce them.
Yeah, he was sick.
He's
allegedly.
Sick. So David Letterman did it.
I heard,
and he was actually really good.
Yeah,
funny and poignant, and told a couple great stories.
So do you know the story behind that, by any chance?
Of why
Dave Letterman did it? So Neil Young obviously was supposed to induct them, but he was ill, and it's kind of a big. Did Letterman have the? I haven't seen footage of. Did he have the big beard and all
giant
that?
Giant beard. He looked like
so
he'd
he
been
did
lost
have the beard
in the woods.
Yeah. So apparently, and Letterman, since he stepped away from his show, has been basically a recluse.
Yes.
And he grew the beard, and everybody's, blah, blah, blah. But apparently, when it was made known that Neil Young could not induct them because of his health, Letterman volunteered. Apparently, he had Pearl Jam on, right when they broke back in the early 90s.
He told a story something
and,
like this.
I was asking if you knew the story.
I want to hear the rest.
That's all I know. All I know is he felt an affinity. There's another band, Foo Fighters, that he loves, and Foo Fighters played his last show. I think they were the last musical act to be on. I think, if not the last, they were one of the last musical acts during his final week, and it was May of 2015 when he went out. And the same deal, like Dave Grohl basically said, Dave Letterman was there for us.
Yeah.
We're going to be here for him. And I think, Letterman, he's a huge Pearl Jam fan, and he is one of the people that gave them a break back in the day when they first burst onto the scene.
And Dave told a cool story. I guess his son, Dave's son's now 10 years old or something, but, 5 years ago or something, one of his last shows, Eddie Vedder signed a guitar, a smaller guitar, a kid-sized guitar, gave it to his son with a really handwritten note that was, hey, if you learn how to play this, there's some songs in here, you kind of got to figure it out. But if you learn to play this and you like it, you let me know and I will get you a bigger one.
Oh, wow. That's
cool. Yeah, so it was a really cool story. Yeah. And then because of Neil Young and Pearl Jam, one of their sort of encore songs that they play often is Rockin' in the Free World, the Neil Young song. So they played that anyway, and they had an all-star jam where they come out.
Ringo Starr come out? Ringo
peace
Starr.
And love. Peace and love.
Ringo Starr. Kid Rock. Kid Rock had to show up because he shows up at every freaking induction tribute ceremony. Ladies and gentlemen, Kid Rock. Keep on looking at me. Kid Rock shows up at every freaking tribute.
He might have been there. Who knows?
I mean, it could be it could be the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. Ladies and gentlemen, inducting the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Kid Rock. I've been a Nitty Gritty Dirt fan for 45 years. Hey, you're only 42 years old. Hey, whatever, man. So,
I heard he's running for governor of Michigan. Or something like that.
You know what? He'll win.
I know. I'd
vote for him.
I know.
Why not?
Some clean water, and you could win that pretty easily.
Could you imagine he comes out for a campaign stop? He's like, ball with the ball, but dang it, dang.
That would be the greatest, the political
music. Too bad the little midget's not around anymore. He could be he could be his running mate, lieutenant governor, so he could campaign manager or something like that. You remember that little guy?
Yeah. I don't remember his name. Joe C. was his name.
Joe C.
Yeah, so the show was great, but getting back to A-Bird, so our thing, we're talking about the greatest American rock band. So A-Bird's got this thing about Iron Maiden. They're from England.
They're British. Yeah, Bruce Dickinson's British.
So they don't even count A-Bird.
Right.
So, yeah, okay, you want to bring up Zeppelin and The Who and The Stones and The Beatles? Yeah, they're better than Pearl Jam, too, but they're not in. That's not what we're talking about. And then he also had some, he missed some facts of how many records they'd sold and, saying that they have 40 million records sold more than Pearl Jam. Well, it's maybe 30 million more, but they've also been at it for 20 more years in Pearl Jam. They don't last 10 or 15 years, people don't really make albums and they don't sell them like they Used to.
But the category.
So the music business has changed. It's right. Like, hey, they've had more. They sold more flip phones than Pearl Jam.
But the category was.
People do it differently now.
And look, I like Dan. And he actually. Like,
yes. I'm just saying this is part of his continuing education. I hope he's listening to this and taking notes.
Well, but he also, like, I've come to find he's a big Metallica guy. But I think, like, and I don't know if it's Dan's, like, generation, and I don't want to sound like that. I don't want to sound like an old, you know, an old fogey, but...
Too late. Well, Grandpa Dixon.
Get off my lawn. No, it was, like, he listened to our podcast. He's like, okay, your top five Metallica songs. And, like, I don't operate that way. Like, I love Metallica. And and one is the standard for me with respect to Metallica. I also didn't start listening to Metallica until, like, 1988, my sophomore year in high school. So I know they have a body of work before. And Dave Mustaine used to be the lead singer of Metallica before they kicked him out, and he headed up Megadeth. So I guess, like, but the category is your favorite American rock band. And I think, look, music can be a lot like sports, where you're like, well, who's a better player, Mike Schmidt or Brooks Robinson? Well, Brooks Robinson hit a lifetime, 320 and had, it was like geek sports writers, the nerds that vote for the Hall of Fame, the geeks that think it's funny not to have Cal Ripken be unanimous selection, or, it's like one jabroni thinks it's funny not to vote for Cal. They think that's funny.
Because, like, Babe Ruth wasn't unanimous.
It's stupid.
So how can anybody else?
It's a bunch of dorks.
You saying that Dan's a dork? Because I don't think that's
I'm not
true.
Saying Dan's a dork at all. I'm not saying he's a dork at all. But I guess, like, when you get into stats.
Hear it from Avery and Lamar.
No, when you get into stats, like who sold, 50 million records versus, I don't care. Yeah. I like this band better than this band because I like them. I don't care. I mean, I remember... you remember there was a rapper named Jazz? He sang a song called Hawaiian Sophie.
I don't
look it
that.
Up. Who's the young MC in the background, like doing the turntable and all that? That's a question for our listeners. And if you can answer that on Twitter once this thing hits, the DJ, I think the guy was Jazz, J-A-Z. And the song is Hawaiian Sophie. So I might have the MC's name wrong, but the song is called Hawaiian Sophie. And there is a young rapper in the video who's like the sidekick to this guy, Jazz. And he went on to very, very big things.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, Tupac was a background dancer for Digital Underground.
Jennifer Lopez was one of the Fly Girls, one in Living Color. She sucks, though, but Jennifer Lopez sucks. But Tupac is the... Wait a minute, so like Humpty Dance and all that?
He was in the background dancer for Digital Underground.
Do what you like.
Yeah.
Well, they were on... Tupac, I get around, round and round, round we go. The lead singer of Digital Underground, Shock G, was in that track, if you remember that correctly. So
yeah, Tupac's music is it holds up, man. You
it does
to it now. It's still pretty.
Yeah, cool. I was never a big Tupac guy though. It's just a little too, a little too rough around the edges. But I do have a couple of his CDs.
Well, speaking of rough around the edges, Dix, this weekend was kind of tough for road teams going in their conference games, going on the road. Penn State, Hopkins, Boston University, Notre Dame. All struggled on the road or took L's. So let's get right to the games. Let's start with a game you did in College Park on Saturday. Maryland 15, Penn State 11. We talked about this earlier. It seemed like what happened to defense? Whoever had the ball was going to score in this one, right?
Well, it's not just Penn State, Maryland. It just seems like, it's kind of been a theme all year that offenses rule. And defenses have been struggling, and now that the weather's warmer and you're getting into conference play, I think we're seeing that even, we saw it this weekend, in both the games I covered. It just seemed like whoever had Hopkins didn't have the ball much against Ohio State. But when they did, they seemed to find some success offensively. The same thing can be said for Penn State. They struggled mightily at the faceoff dot and struggled to get possessions, and, at the end of the day, they didn't have the ball that much and still put up 11 goals. Now, Maryland, did not get the strongest day out of their goaltender, Dan Morris, but still, you know, if you're Maryland and you only get, I think they credited Morris with 6 saves. They won 20 out of 30 faceoffs. Matt Rambo was a stud, just a total stud. I mean, that's a pretty good day. So, anyhow, offenses are really good these days. I mean, they're. Yeah, I think Maryland got off to a great start. And if you were, Iowa State won all 9 faceoffs in the first half and only had, I think, like 3 goals to show for it. It's a ton of shots in the first quarter, like 5 or 6 shots that were just off cage. They didn't even put them on cage. Maryland hit those shots. Maryland did not miss. And they 12-6, and then Penn State made it 12-9. At that point, it's midway through the third quarter. And Dan Morris, they said he had 1 save. I didn't see it. I thought he had 0 saves. But he made 3 saves out of that timeout in rapid succession over like a minute and a half, 2-minute period. Because I think he saved 2, and then they went to clear, and it was a failed clear, and then Penn State got another. He made those 3 saves in that very tight window, and that proved to be the difference in the game, because then the ball went down the other end of the field. Maryland scored. They scored 2 more, and all of a sudden, you know, it was 12-6, 12-9, then now all of a sudden it's 15-9. The game's kind of over at that point. So timely goaltending from Maryland. Penn State, you know, defensively, again, Matt Rambo, they couldn't cover. In the first quarter, they just couldn't cover. They couldn't cover Connor Kelly. They couldn't cover Matt Rambo. They couldn't cover Colin Heacock in the second quarter. So they're one-on-one. They lost their one-on-one matchups. They tightened things up. They went to a zone a little bit to throw Maryland off, and they kind of settled in and got back in the game. But they've never beaten Maryland in men's lacrosse. So you have Penn State in men's lacrosse. And the number one team's coming in the College Park. I Joe Beninati and I in our open for the game said that it's a very, very good lacrosse team, and they've got a monster game coming up this weekend against Hoppin.
Today, when you're listening to this on Wednesday, Albany.
And that's going to be – they play Penn State on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They go to Albany for tomorrow, April 12th, so if you're listening to this. Yeah. April 12th. Tough road games.
Yeah, and then Hopkins to finish up on the 29th. So why didn't they make that their senior day?
I don't know. That was an interesting question. Joe and I, Carolyn Hopkins, just too much. The rivalry and all that good stuff. Maybe that's...
Yeah, Matt Kinnear will be at that Maryland-Albany game. And filling in for you, they said that they called that the midweek game of the year.
Danes have a great face-off, man.
They do. TD Ireland.
Yeah. The guy's winning...
Committed Academy. His last 2 games. He was our Committed Academy Freshman of the Week the last week. 2 of 62 in 2 games, 84%. That'll boost your. That's good, right? That's if you. Okay, Dix. Moving on. You were also called the Ohio State 14-9. Really, just outplayed the Blue Jays in the second half. 4 goals and 3 assists on the game for the Buckeyes.
So Mike Wolf and I called this game. Talked to coaches and Nick Myers. Mike just asked a very, like, kind of innocent question in the beginning of the season, but hadn't been getting a whole lot of reps lately. And Coach Nick Myers said, you know what, we got to find a way to get him on the field, but get him more involved in our offense. Well, he ends up with 4 goals and 3 assists and basically steals conference win for Ohio State. You know, they could have gone down with a loss to Hopkins. They could have gone down 0-2. I mean, it was a good game, and both teams came out firing. Hopkins was up 5-3 at the end of the first quarter. Joel Tinney came out with 2 huge goals, and you know, I commented on the broadcast. I mean, Tinney looks like he's just coming out of his shoes when he shoots. He's just so unorthodox, but so powerful and accurate. And opportunities, Hopkins had 4 faceoff violations in the first half. So the 3rd and 4th resulted in 32nd man ups for the Penn State-Ohio State game the week before, where Drake Kreinz came out and won the opening draw. Since the Notre Dame game, he was shut out against Penn State, gets his first goal of the game unassisted, where he just denies Ohio State. It was 7-6 at half, and then Ohio to turn a 7-6 deficit into a 9-7 advantage, and it just seemed to go from there, and 7 and 10-7, and he's working behind the cage. And then he has this wicked change of direction, and so Hopkins has to start respecting that change of direction, and he started going top side, and he scored 3 goals in the fourth quarter just with, like, fake change of directions, and he was on fire. He was absolutely on fire, but... you know, great job by Ohio State. I thought their defense played well when they had to. Tom Carey was good in the nets. And that's a huge win for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, it sure is. Another huge win this weekend was Army 11-10 over BU. Kind of came back in that one. And Army is now sitting pretty at 6-0 atop the Patriot League standing, while BU, who started strong, slipped to 3-3. What are your takeaways from that one?
Well, Army's a team that I haven't been able to see. You know, I haven't seen a ton of live. I've seen them on tape. But they're the only team to have beaten Syracuse this year. And when they knocked off the Orange back in February, you know, it was like, okay, well, you know, everybody don't think Syracuse is that good. Well, Syracuse is number one team in the country right now. You know, they keep winning. And as we speak, they're you know, putting the boom on to Cornell.
Yeah.
So that team just keeps on winning. But, you know, the Army's on a 9-game win streak right now. And when you look at the Patriot League, Loyola was favored coming in. They've struggled.
Well, they're 5-1 in the league. I mean, they're
yeah, but they lost to
hanging in there.
They lost to
Virginia and Hopkins.
But they lost their lost in their league. Who they Bucknell?
Yeah, in overtime. But they're 5-1. Army's 6-0, and they haven't played each other.
Is you know Loyola's the favorite. They stumble in the out-of-conference, then they stumble in conference against Bucknell. You're out. They're very hard to figure out. Yeah. Then you have Navy, no pun intended. But
I think you meant to intend a pun. Sure. There. But a lot of injuries.
Yeah. So, and then you have BU was undefeated and starting.
And they're 3-3 in the league, 9-3 overall. They're going to need to get the AQ to get into the dorm.
They look like the class of the league right now.
Army could lose the AQ and in some others that they have.
Right.
Yeah.
But I like the balance that you David Sims, 2 goals. Cole Johnson, arguably their best player, 2 goals. Connor Glancy, 2 goals. Just a balanced Army team that just...
Bretto in goal, not his terrific. Best game, but I love that kid.
He's good.
I think he's really good. Really nice.
6, Jones, 24, Glancy, 20. You know, that's pretty balanced, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty balanced. And they got a face-off, man. Dan Grabber, who's all I know is you pronounce it 67% at the dot. That's pretty impressive.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Dix. Another team that you are dying to talk about, the Binghamton.
The Bearcats.
Yeah. 9. And they're rolling.
Again, the America. I know we talked about... oh, geez, UMBC a few weeks ago, and the strides that Coach Ryan Moran has made with that program and those guys. I mean, how about Kevin McCune and Binghamton? So, quick story.
He's got to be Coach of the Year candidate.
Sure.
Coach of the Year candidate.
Quick story. So, a few years ago, Ed Stevenson, who's now the coach at UMass Lowell, longtime assistant at UMBC, and actually, so he was a coach of the Bing. And I can't remember the circumstances, but something went down, and he was dismissed during the season. And we were doing the game that week, or right around the time that Ed stepped down from the Bing, and this kid, Kevin McCune, took over. Used to be a goalie, was an assistant. I was just, like, really impressed with the guy's energy and his excitement, and they walked correctly. But I remember saying to Scott Garceau, my broadcast partner, I'm like, let's keep an eye on this guy. Like, if Bing.
Yeah, Scott Nelson.
Scott Nelson, yeah. Him. Former coach of Brown, former coach of Nazareth.
Yeah.
And the most of it. You know, I mean, they're, like you said, they're. Actually, I'm trying to look.
They're 9-1 overall.
9-1.
3-0 in the American.
Yeah, I thought it was big now. I mean, Delaware's win over Rutgers, and they're competing in the CAA. But, you know, they've knocked off BC, Albany. They got a game at Syracuse, actually. Later this month, and then they wrap up.
I mean, they would have to be in the running for like a home game in
they're
the first round.
That's what you have to ask, and I'm going to say no.
Oh, come on. They had to get the
They've been to the America Q.
Oh, they've played
made the tournament.
But you're just talking about postseason.
Oh, I'm talking about postseason. Like, there's, I don't think there's ever been a player, Tom Moore, who's pretty darn good, 54 points in him as 27 points. So he's doubling up the next closest scorer. Albany and all that fun
Albany,
stuff.
Yeah, so they finish up Albany. I can't believe we're talking about it. And at Albany at Syracuse in a midweek game, and the toughest games in their league are coming up So we'll see what they're made of in the next in Durham on Saturday.
Yeah.
Duke gets a great with four goals. They shut down the Notre Dame offense.
And now the question is, so Duke has now won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 blemish on the road against Syracuse in overtime, a game they easily could have won, a game they had down in Durham, where you have a team that was scuffling early season, lost to Air Force to open up, wins over High Point, Cleveland State. Okay, whatever. They're both those teams are struggling this year. Cleveland State, first-year program under Dylan Sheridan. And High Point has had a lot of injuries and just not playing at the level that a lot of people thought they were. Lose to Denver 14-9. And then they just, you know, I really think that Richmond win on March the 5th was the turnaround for this team.
Yeah, the comeback win.
Comeback
on
win.
On the road.
On the road. You know, just gut check time, really. You know, and then they come back and a week later and they pace Loyola. I mean, this is a good team. And you don't, you know, you just don't hear a lot about Duke, you know, with Miles Jones gone, with Deamer Class gone, and, you know, the headliners of that program, really, over the last few years. But Bruckner and Guterding are terrific. If you look at the current point streak, consecutive game scoring streak, Connor Canizaro leads the NCAA with 51 straight games, but Bruckner and Guterding are right there.
Dix, you know what else you can feel pressure on? When you need to get someone a really cool, very unique gift, and you don't know where to go to get it. Well, if you have a lacrosse fan in your life, and I'm sure you have many of them, Sideline Swap. That's where you go. They take all the pressure off you and make it easy for you to find the gift that you need to give. Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more. Or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely. List it in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit SidelineSwap.com today to get started. It's that simple. That's Sideline, SWAP.com. SidelineSwap.com. All right, Dix, in top five, and then you give me your reasoning.
Five, we were talking about this before the show, and I think I got mine wrong. Because five is Maryland. I jumped the Terps back into the top five after that big win over Penn State. I think they're playing really solid lacrosse right now, and they're a force to be reckoned with. Number four is Albany. The Danes are solid, you know, are solid. Are they for real? Like, that's the, you know, is Rutgers for real? Is Penn State for real? Is this, you know, Duke for real? No, I think Albany is for real, and they have a tremendous opportunity against Maryland on Wednesday, April 12th to make a statement. Number three is Denver. I bumped the Pios back up after a big home win against Villanova, a Villanova team that had won, I think, four in a row and had been playing some pretty good ball. So that gives the Pios a leg up, you know, in the Big East. Number two, Flying Dutchman. The Camaro driving, gold chain wearing,
pride.
Fat cat eating. No, I'm just kidding. Back in the day, Jason Pressman and I used to joke about the food trucks up around Hofstra, and they had a big like gyro sandwich. I know it's not gyro; it's like a Edel sandwich called the Fat Cat. And you like run up, you know, and be like Greek food. The guy's like, yeah, I got Greek food, a Fat Cat, something like that. So you order un Fat Cat.
I remember when you were playing, or maybe right after, I was working at Hopkins, and Tony Seaman was the coach of Hopkins. He used to always love to go play Hofstra on the island because he thought it was a recruiting advantage. So instead of being like home and home every other season, it would be sort of like two games on the island and maybe one back at Hopkins, but they'd play every year. And I remember it was always a night game. It was always a packed crowd.
It was always in a weekday.
Yeah, so those are always awesome games.
Well, so when we would warm up.
Dino was the coach, right?
Yeah, John Donowski was the coach. When we would warm up on the road, there would always be kids.
This is like 20 years ago.
1994 is when I graduated, so between 91 and 94. So, yeah, we're pushing 25 years. Thanks for reminding me of that. When we would warm up on the road, like, kids would be behind the goal, like, shagging lacrosse balls. And the kids, whether, you know, Virginia, even Maryland, Army, kids would be, you know, around the field, like ball boys or just kids, you know, in just
that. So way. You're saying at the different places you'd play, there'd be a ball boys on the field.
Ball boys or even kids just in the stands that would get on the field. So, I mean, you know, right. Security is not the tightest.
Yeah,
you know,
it's gotten a lot better, but yes.
Right.
25 years ago, it was pretty relaxed.
And kids, like, couldn't wait to, like, chase the shot down and then throw it back to you, right? You go to Hofstra, and you miss the goal, and kids would go get the ball and be like, hey, here's your help. Yeah, I got your help right here. And they'd take the ball. Like, they'd run away with the ball. Like, yeah, look what I got. Look what I got. Yeah, Hopkins guy thinks he's getting his ball back. And, you know, they would just give it to you. And it was funny.
Surprise.
Like, it was really, really. I mean, but being a Maryland guy, I'm like, the guy took my ball. He took my ball.
I can't give it back. Give
yeah,
it
meanwhile,
back.
Your guys like Brian Pacall, like, Dicks, you're not getting that one back. Welcome to the island, you know? Just, you know, stuff like that was just.
Shouldn't have missed.
Yeah, so that was fun.
All right, and, so Hofstra's your number two team.
Yep, number one is Syracuse.
The Cuse,
it's got to be
Syracuse. They well deserve, too.
It's got to be Syracuse.
Just keep winning games against good teams.
Just keep winning.
You become the number one team.
And a pretty sweet extra man offense. Those guys are humming right now with the EMO.
Yeah, they're playing great. So it's time for the Epic Isle Committed Academy Freshman of the Week. Put a poll out. It had a great turnout, fan votes, almost about 1,000 votes. I think it was 923. And we had some really deserving candidates this week. Ryan Graff from Harvard had 3 goals. We had Joe Madsen. St. John's attackman. He had a career-high 4 goals and a 17-9 loss to Marquette. And Joe Tierney from Marist attackman. Beth Page kid, 3 goals, 1 assist, and a 9-8 win over Quinnipiac. After 923 votes, a dead heat, Dix. We had a tie, 40% of the vote. Two guys, Ryan Graff, Harvard. Again, he's a Bloomington, Minnesota kid. He had 3 goals. And he's got 15 goals and 2 assists in 10 games on the season. And then Joe Tierney. So Ryan Graff and Joe Tierney tied at 40%. They are co-IL Committed Academy Freshman Player of the Week. So again, this is an award for Committed Academy alums. We're tracking you guys. We're following your careers. These guys played in our Committed Academy last summer in our inaugural event. The event this year will be the end of July, last weekend, July 28th to 30th down here in Baltimore. And we'll have 2017 class and 2018 class. This year, it's a transformative 3-day developmental camp that is really a must if you're a committed Division I lacrosse player and you're serious about your game and improving yourself on and off the field. You need to be at the Committed Academy, and we will see you then. Dix, I got something I want to talk to you about. I've been dying to talk to you about this for a while, if you got some time.
I'm not talking about Bruce Springsteen anymore. Done with the boss.
So you did 3 games in 2 days this weekend. I have been a little bit behind the scenes in, you know, my career broadcasts and producing games and things like that. But I don't think a lot of people understand the time prep and all the work that goes into what goes on behind the TV. You don't just show up and sit down at the booth, at the mic, and call the game. So let's talk about this for a few minutes. Like, what goes on? Like, you know, you're going to do a game on Saturday. So
yeah.
Just say you're doing one game this week. Let's not try to get, like, the 3 games you did in 2 days. What's your week like? I'm sure you have, like, some calls with the producer. You have calls with the coaches. You know, what game day is like. I'd really like to inform our listeners of what that preparation is.
So, yeah, you know, it's I'm trying to think where to start. Because it kind of all starts in the winter when you're, you know, it's funny, you're sitting there and you're like, what's the schedule going to be like? You know, what games am I going to get? And, you know, so you're floating.
So you're saying, like, in the wintertime.
Yeah.
ESPN,
right after January 1 is when, you know, you start thinking, okay, it's a new year and teams are getting to practice that week and the season's right around the corner. Scrimmages start in 3 weeks. Typically, third week of January is when scrimmages start. And then the first games are typically first, second weekend in February. So you start thinking about lacrosse. And you're at the mercy, really, of programming for any network that you do work for. They have to put their programming in place. So, and then when it comes, it, like, comes in, it's like a, you know, it's like the rapids. You know, someone's basically opened up the floodgates, and here it all comes. So you sit and you're like, you're waiting. You never think it's going to come. You know, you hear your phone ping, you hear your email twang, and you're like, oh, this is it. And you're like, oh, you know, another
message from Dan Flynn about a podcast.
Yeah. Another Groupon offer. So, but you know, you get into the season, you do your game. So, you know, Monday, you kind of take everything in from the weekend. Probably actually Sunday is when you take everything in from the weekend, because I vote in the Inside Lacrosse Maverick Media Poll. So you kind of, you know, glance at scores and take into consideration some things, and you put your poll together. You know, Monday you do a little bit more of a deep dive into the into what's going on in the landscape of the game. And by Tuesday, you know, you've got you're watching the film of the teams that you're covering. You know, and then you get the email.
Where do you get the film from? Does ESPN or Big Ten send it to you, or
you can request it? But more oftentimes it's stuff that's on YouTube or other outlets. You know, other ways of getting
sure.
You know, game film. A lot of stuff is streamed and or broadcast, so you can look at, you know, watch those games, which is, you know, you DVR them and things like that. You know, DVR works overtime in the spring, and especially in lacrosse season. So you get all that, you start watching, and then you know, typically Monday is when your producer reaches out and says, okay, what days are good and what times are good for conference calls, and so you set those up, and then you have you kind of have formal conference calls with the coaches. And
who else is on the conference call with the coach?
Typically, it's so for someone like me, it'll be my broadcast partner, my play by play, and then the producer. So it's not a lot of people, and the SID from each respective school.
Yeah, so now it's like seven people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, typically
five. Okay.
And, you know, you want to, a big thing is right up front, you identify who's on the call, because, you know, coaches don't want other, you know, they want to know who's listening.
Sure.
To them. And a lot of times, you know, when you're in the teleconference system, you just hear chimes, you know, it's just like, bing, and it's like, okay, hey, can you? Who just joined the call? Is anybody there? Anybody just joined the call? But then you have your call, and they typically last anywhere between 20 to 40 minutes, you know? Some coaches are a little bit more succinct than others. Others, you know, like to talk a lot, and that's fine. You know, it's their, you know, not only is it our time to learn about their team, it's their time to talk about their team. And so you do that. And if you have any further questions, coaches are always very, very gracious. They're like, you know, just give me a call on my cell phone, or I'll reach out, shoot me an email, whatever you need. You know, whatever you guys need, I'm here to do. So then you start putting your boards together. When I'm the analyst, I typically don't create a ton of information, just because I like the game to be the story itself, you know, and kind of breathe. I have notes and some tidbits, but really, you know, for me, a game is about the two teams that are playing and the story that's going to be told by those two teams. Like, that's your story. I mean, obviously you have some compelling backdrops to certain teams, certain players, certain games, more so than others. But I think the superstar is always the game. And then, you know, I've been doing this a long enough time. I can go anywhere in a broadcast. You know, if we're covering a Big Ten game, you want to talk ACC, we can do that. You want to talk Colonial, we can do that. You want to talk America East within the bot, but you don't want to get too distracted from the task at hand, which is what's out front. So you go ahead and you have your calls, you know, and then you travel if you need to. Typically, producers, the powers that be, like you on site at least 2 hours before face-off. You can use that time to talk to the SIDs to gather up information. You can use that time to go down onto the field and talk to the coaches down on the field before games, and most of them are, all of them actually, are very accessible and very amenable to that. If they're having a bad day or aren't interested, they'll let you know. Because coaches are like, you know, they're nervous before games, and they're ready for their kids to play. And then you go up and you execute the game, basically. And then throughout the course of a game, you know, you have two buttons. You have a cough button, which is pretty self-explanatory. Then you have a talk back button, and you're always on the talk back. You know, can we get a replay of this? Can we get a graphic of that? Can we, you know, can you build a video highlight package of this player?
Now, when are you using that? On breaks or?
Typically in live action. So the talkback button, when you hit the talkback button, it kills your mic.
Oh, okay.
And the only
to the broadcast.
To the broadcast, and it just and it you have a direct line to your producer in the truck.
Oh, okay.
And so you can be like, you know, save is made, you know, you're like, "Hey, can we get a replay of that save real quick?" Or like for instance in the Ohio State Hopkins game, there was a sequence of face-off violations. So I was like, "Can we put a face-off violation package together?" You know, and they did it, nice. You know, and they do it in very short. And then a lot of times the really good producers will suggest stuff to us, you know. Another component of it, you know, I got to admit social media plays a huge role. So, like, during breaks, you tend to check Twitter, and people are tweeting at you. And they, you know, and it's I think it's, you know, you like some of the stuff. Sometimes you respond if there's questions or, you know, what do you think of this or what's going on here and there and stuff. But you try not to get too distracted with that stuff. But that has become a component of broadcasting.
So a couple questions for you. So you mentioned the boards, and I've seen these things before, like, you know, in the play-by-play or the analyst booth, they'll just be giant. Like, guys take almost, like, folders or a huge piece of paper, and they'll write notes, or they'll have a depth chart and a lineup and stuff and notes on each player and stats. And guys make really elaborate ones. Now, you said you don't really do a lot of that when you're analyzing, and you explain why. But will your broadcast partner do that? Or if you are calling play-by-play, will you do a little bit more of that so that you have segues and tidbits to talk about to start conversation with your analyst?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So every play-by-play person that I work with has boards. When I do play-by-play, I have boards. I kind of have streamlined mine, especially if you have to travel. So I'll, like, make them out of manila folders, you know, like two-sided and
all
that.
I've seen them.
Yeah, and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting. You try to, you know, the person who taught me how to make a board is Scott Garceau, and he'd have big poster board, and he would, like, cut them in half, and one team would be, you know, I'm not good at measurements, but, you know, pretty decent-sized poster board, and the other one would be a pretty decent-sized poster board, and it's all color-coded. You know, like, attack is in orange, and the midfield's in blue, and the defense is in green, and the goalie is in purple, and I've, you know, streamlined mine over the years. Two guys that have helped me with their style of boards is Mike Corey, buddy of mine that I broadcast with ESPN.
Former voice of the Delaware Blue Hens.
Former voice of the Delaware Blue Hens.
Call games.
Yeah, Mike Corey here. Delaware Blue Hens coming out. Joe Flacco. And then Anish Shroff has helped out a lot with his style of doing boards and, like, some of the information that he puts on there. So, you know, you learn from each other, and you take information from each other and stuff like that. And, you know, you just kind of streamline things as you move along.
So another question I had is, you mentioned, like, you're talking to someone, a producer somewhere. Now, they're usually, like, because you're doing it at a stadium or something, they're in a truck.
Yeah.
They're not, like, in the press box with you most of the time. So who else is in this truck that you always hear about? Oh, they're down in the truck. So how many people are in there? There's, you know, replay guy or two, you know, just watching and recording packages, highlight packages and replays. There's a producer,
director, technical director. You got somebody working the bug, which is like graphics stuff
guy.
That pops up on the bug.
So there could be as many
audio.
As 5, 6, 7 people in one of these trucks.
Even more, yeah. In some bigger shows and bigger productions, it's even more. But audio is huge. I mean, you know, that's critical. You got bad audio. On either end, you're screwed, you know, so you have to have a good audio person.
And then there's the cameramen and women that are...
Yeah, but they're not in the truck.
Three or four out there. So a crew could be as many as, like, 20 people, right, doing a game?
Yeah.
A college lacrosse game.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool, man. I really appreciate you sharing that. I've been thinking about
and every,
that for
and every,
a while.
Look, every show's different. Every show's different. Sometimes you have 4 cameras. Sometimes you have 6. You know, the placement. Like for instance, the Big Ten Network game I did, Maryland-Penn State, we broadcast the game from opposite the bench side in the middle concourse of Maryland Stadium, where normally you broadcast from the football position. But, you know, we feel like that's too high of an angle.
Really high.
Yeah, so it's too high of an angle. So, but you make sacrifices. When you're up high like that, you're inside and you're kind of protected. When you're in the middle concourse, and it was a little breezy on Saturday, it's a wind tunnel. So you're a little chillier and maybe not as comfortable as you would be up in the press box, quote unquote, or the, you know, the broadcast position. But at the end of the day, the main objective is to cover the game and make the experience as most enjoyable as you can for the viewer, and as appetizing as you can for the viewer. So that's why we broadcast the game from the middle of the concourse and give a much better camera. We feel, you know, a much better camera angle for that particular game.
All right, Dix. Excellent games coming up this week. What to watch for April 14th to 16th. Virginia at Duke. It's Virginia's last stand.
Yeah.
At Duke. We talked about that one. Duke's playing really well, and it's going to be a tough one for Virginia. Army, Navy.
Wow.
This weekend.
Wow. Last year, Navy won in overtime. Casey Reese scored the game winner. And then Navy got the number one seed home field in the Patriot League tournament and got an Army return, you know, smoked them, beat them.
Loyola at BU. We talked about BU being 3-3 in the league, Loyola being 5-1. This is a key game for Loyola because if they lose this, Army will have a 2-game lead on them if they can somehow get by Navy.
Navy, yeah.
So they really need this one to keep pace with the Army West Point.
Yeah.
Penn State at Johns Hopkins.
Big game.
Yeah.
You know, Hopkins are both 1-1, and a game that Hopkins has won the last 2 years in overtime. Tinney goal in 2015 in overtime at Homewood Field. Crawley, John Crawley last year up at State College in overtime. So that's a big game. And you know, former coaching Tambroni and Petro were together at Cornell. Yeah,
really good friends. Really good friends. Syracuse at UNC.
Big game. Wow. I mean, you know, UNC got back on track with the one goal or the 3-goal victory over Virginia. That game will be on grass, you know, natural grass. Syracuse doesn't play on grass a whole lot. So we'll see how the Orange adjust to the surface. Again, you know, I've said it all year, Carolina defensively just very good. You know, Brian Balcom was sensational against Virginia the other night. And Austin Pafani and Ryan Macri, I mean, those guys are good. You know, it's just the offensive leadership, you know, hasn't been there more times than not for North Carolina. And Syracuse just keeps, you know, Mariano is just floating between midfield and attack, doing a great job. And Salcido's a handful. I mean, Salcido's got 24, 25 assists this season. That's incredible. He's doing a great job. So that's a heck of a game.
Brown at Yale.
Wow.
Remember last year how big that game was in the regular season?
Yeah, Yale's undefeated in the Ivy, and Brown just knocked off Penn. So, you know, the Bears, literally, and Yale's getting better goaltending, but they can play offense. Like, they're good. So that game, shoot, man, that game could be 21-20, something like
it's
that.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be a high-scoring affair. Yeah,
that's one to definitely keep an eye out on.
Yeah.
And then my last game that I have down is Maryland at Rutgers. Rutgers got a much-needed win rebound over Michigan last week. And, you know, the former number one team could really use a win at home against Maryland this week.
Yeah, so Easter egg hunt in Piscataway, Easter night, Sunday. I have a call for you with Joe Beninati on Big Ten Network. So 2 years ago, up Maryland Rutgers, Matt Rambo scored the game winner late in the game, and then Maryland escaped with a 1-goal win, last season in the regular season, and in the Big Ten Tournament Championship game, Maryland beat Rutgers. So three in a row for the Terps over the Scarlet Knights, and Rutgers would like nothing better than to flip the script. As you mentioned, get back on track with a big 14-7 win over Michigan. Maryland's riding high after knocking off Penn State, and they're on a three-game run right now. You know, before we're broadcasting or we're recording this before the Albany game, so we'll see if that holds. But that's going to be a really good game. That's going to be a great game.
Yeah, and you said you're on the call with that one.
Got it.
Awesome. Yep. Look forward to watching that. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go.
Uh-oh.
This wasn't the same without you last week. But
probably not.
So here's how it goes. I give you a topic, and then I tell you what I like about it, and then give you a chance to go on it. So I know you love Mexican food.
I do.
I know it's one of your favorites, and I went to one of your favorite restaurants the other night with my family, Ernesto's. Quality Mexican food
off of Route 40 in Ellicott City.
Over in your
or is everybody that not from Ellicott City says Ellicott City?
Yeah. So here's my thing. Okay. What are your three favorite things on a menu in a Mexican restaurant?
Three favorite dishes.
Yeah. So okay. Or things, period.
Okay.
That you can get there. So I'm going to start with...
Bruce Springsteen punch. Right? Grateful
Dead. I call it a Bruce bowl. It's a Bruce burrito bowl.
A Bruce burrito bowl.
Yeah. Tastes like Jersey.
Yeah.
It tastes like saltwater taffy from the shore.
Tastes like Jersey. It's not happy with anything. It's got a mouth on it.
It is salty, though. It's a margarita.
It's salty.
It is a margarita, and this is the only way you can get I'm a on the rocks.
So wait a minute. This is your first answer. Margarita's your first.
Yeah, a good one at a place that they know how to make it. You know, we're making it from scratch.
Like the margaritas in a bucket?
It's not like, you know, you watch the guy squeeze the lime in and all that stuff. That's how the first thing. Second thing, I can't resist the fajitas there.
Fajitas are, yeah. When you say there, you're talking about
a Mexican
restaurant in general.
Yes. Okay. I love the fajitas.
Fajitas are great.
I get the combo, chicken steak, sometimes some shrimp. Ooh. I love building them. You know, you got the little things. You make just the right amount. And,
look at you.
It's nothing better than a solid fajita. Plus, it comes out and everyone's like,
everybody's like, ooh,
that guy got the fajitas. Good. Look at a steaming platter. Good when you have like two toddlers at your table. Yeah. And they want to just grab the hot steaming plate. But,
and they touch the skillet.
Yeah. And then my third thing, it's very subtle.
Refried beans.
Yeah, and the rice next to each other on the plate.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and you mix them together.
Yeah.
Oh, the rice and the refried beans, like just that combination. It's just like my favorite thing.
No kidding.
Like Nacho Mamas down in Canada.
Sure.
That's like my favorite part of that entire establishment.
Wow.
And there, talk about margaritas. You get the hubcap margarita. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing better than that thing.
I was just in Nacho Mamas in Towson for the first time a few weeks
ago.
Tell
me about that.
Did I already tell you about that?
Like the home office down in Canton?
No, it's different. It's different. It's bigger. A little brighter.
Talk about going corporate.
Yeah, well, but I was in Towson. I had some time to kill. Bellied up to the bar, got a beer, got a Modelo Special. No, yeah. I've never liked Natty Bo.
Bows and crabs. Can't beat it in the summertime. But you don't like
bows and O's.
You can't eat crabs.
No. Bows and O's though. Had the Wisconsin Villanova basketball game on, and then a guy walks in. You know, because Villanova was playing Maryland at the time. It was on ESPNU. And,
Lacrosse game.
Yeah, okay. And I wasn't going to ask. This is March Madness. This is second round of the NCAA tournament. You got the defending champions in a dogfight with Wisconsin. Some guy walks in and goes, hey, you know Maryland's playing. And the bartender didn't even skip a beat. He goes, oh, lacrosse? He's like, oh, yeah. So they put the Villanova-Maryland game on.
That's so how I'm you know like, you're in Baltimore.
Yeah. I'm like having a beer, eating good food. I think I got a quesadilla.
It's honorable mention.
That's kind of their thing. At least from what I know, Nacho Mamas.
They do. They have a 30 quesadilla.
Sure. And so I'm like, I was like in heaven, you know, for like just like 35 minutes while these two sporting events were going on, and you know, I got to hang out.
That's awesome.
But all right. So,
give it to me. My three. It's a well-made margarita. A fajita and the rice and beans. This is my favorite.
Red beans and rice didn't miss you. All right, so I like burritos. I'm a big burrito guy. You know, I enjoy a good burrito.
Chicken, steak. What's your
steak would be probably my preference, but I tend to eat more chicken just to try not to digest so much red meat. But burritos. I'm a big burrito guy. I love guacamole. Guacamole. Fresh made guacamole is the bomb.
Like at the table where they're
at the table, stone ground or whatever, you know, whatever they do in that.
Ernesto's does that right.
Yes,
too. They do a nice job with that.
And then you gotta have jalapeno in the guacamole. Mm-hmm. You know,
you gotta have everything. He said, "You want everything? I want everything.
You want everything? Onion, tomato,
cilantro."
I like cilantro. That's a big thing about Mexican. A lot of people don't like cilantro.
Yeah, one of my brothers is like can't eat cilantro.
Cilantro in there? I'm not having that. You know, that's weird to me. It's just because I've never had a problem with cilantro. I mean, too much cilantro is too much cilantro, but taste of cilantro.
Moderation.
Yeah, moderation is everything.
All right, burritos, guacamole.
Burritos,
guacamole.
Guacamole. And I would probably have to. I'm a big.
Oh, this is a tough one.
This is tough. This is tough. Because I'm a big Baja Fresh guy. Like, I love Baja.
We've talked about this.
Like, when you talk about the fast food, like, I prefer Baja Fresh to, like, Chipotle. I love Chipotle, but I prefer Baja Fresh. Trying to think. I like fajitas, too.
I know something you really like. I've seen you get, like, several times.
Really?
Fish tacos.
Well, I was going to say tacos, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a Mexican place to get fish tacos.
Right.
But I love fish tacos.
Yeah, I've seen you order them. Like,
really?
Yeah, I forget where we were, where every time we go, you get like, is it like, it's around the office somewhere.
U.S. Lacrosse Convention?
It was like McCormick and Schmick's or something. I forget
yes,
where we go.
Yes, it might be McCormick
and
Schmick's.
Often get that.
Fish tacos.
Like, okay, get that.
And I don't like fried fish. I like it with like fresh, you know, like fresh fish. And you typically can get that at a Mexican restaurant. So, yeah, I would go with fish tacos. That's a strong pull. But any kind of taco, really. Like soft shell. I'm not a hard shell taco guy.
I'm a hard shell guy.
Are you?
Yeah, I like the crunchy corn taco shell.
Do you like the do you like the Taco Bell? Like, what are they put like the they got the hard shell with the refried bean.
I think you get like
paste.
cheese in the shell and like marshmallow in the shell
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. But then you get the hard shell and then the bean like coating. And then the soft shell like wraps around the hard shell and the beans, and then you put whatever you want in the middle. It's like the gorditas or something like that. I don't know.
I can't eat that.
I've never eaten it.
I'm really hungry for a taco.
I don't think I've ever eaten a Taco Bell.
You've said this.
Have I? Okay, my bad.
Shocking.
Right. Yeah,
shocking.
Never eaten a Taco Bell.
I drove by a Taco Bell at about 11:30 on Saturday night. The line at the drive-through, this is on Stone River Parkway, was. There were 50 cars in line.
No kidding.
Yeah, I couldn't. But we were like, are you kidding me?
Like, yo quiero Taco Bell. No quiero Taco Bell.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's funny.
All right, so burrito.
Burrito, guacamole, tacos.
Tacos.
Yeah.
All right. That's our
I mean, Mexican, time. You can't go wrong with anything, really, you know.
It's good stuff. Man.
Right?
Yeah, what's great is like a really good Mexican restaurant where they just there's so much stuff that you wouldn't be considered like this fast foody type or what you think of, but just dishes that are it's like, you know, a chicken with some type of cheese and something else and it comes I couldn't even get to that part of the menu once I saw the fajitas. I was like, and someone else ordered it, you see it on another table.
You hear the sizzle.
I got to get that. It's so good.
Yeah.
All right, that's our give and go for this week. Dix, it was great having you back here. At my house. We didn't even talk about this. We're out on my deck. We had to do this Tuesday night.
Casa de Flynn.
Our schedules. And this is really nice, man.
Yeah.
We have to do this. This might be where we have to do this. Come over to your house.
I don't know, man. You can come to my house. Yeah, sure. But I don't know, man. Yeah, I need some sleep every now and
again. Yeah,
you
look real tired. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Again, we appreciate you listening. Keep telling a friend. Don't forget to listen to Monday's In the Crease podcast with Aburn and Devitt, along with Friday's Weekend Preview podcast featuring Quint Kesenick and Terry Foy, along with our IL Women podcast featuring Hallie Quillenen, and our D2, D3 podcast featuring the man, Matt Kinnear.
Kinnear. Rush fan extraordinaire.
At his wedding a couple summers ago, the priest kept calling him Matt Kinnear.
Are you serious?
It was so embarrassing.
What the world?
Like,
what?
I'm pretty sure he's saying Kinnear. Yeah, he called him Kinnear.
Did he just like deliver a DDT to the priest by any chance?
Did he know
the priest or did his wife know?
I was sitting
the priest?
There next to Terry Foy and we're like, he said Kinnear again, didn't
wow.
he? Yeah, it was great.
Oh boy.
So don't forget to listen to Matt Kinnear's D2, D3 podcast. Dix, thanks for coming over. Everybody enjoy the games and we'll talk to you next week.